And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletics Football GM Podcast.
Cut, five, 85, ready, cut.
And now, the Athletics Mike Sando and former NFL executive of the year, Randy Mueller.
Welcome to the Football GM Podcast for this final week of the 2020 NFL regular season. Looks like we're going to make it with all of the games played, unless something crazy happens during the postseason. That is a victory unto itself. I am Mike Sando, senior writer from The Athletic, here with the GM, Randy Mueller. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Mike. I think we ought to start by thanking our listeners that have hung with us here for, 16, 17 weeks so far?
Yeah, and bless them. And we got a bunch of new ones, too, so welcome everybody, really, in the truest sense of the word. Great topics today. I mean, certainly we're going to Randy, I promise not to throw a phone at you today. It's kind of cool seeing what a phone looks like again. You know, we don't have the landline in the house anymore, don't have one of those phones, but I suppose if I had one, throwing it would be a pretty good option of all the things I could throw. So maybe I need to get one of those like Bill Belichick. We will talk about Patriots, Bills, and not just Buffalo Bills, but Bill. The real Bill. Bill Belichick. We got some incredible Rams, Cardinals quarterback issues. Can you name who might start a quarterback for those teams with a lot on the line? I mean, a lot for not just those teams, but Chicago's affected, a lot of people affected. We'll talk a little bit about Dwayne Haskins' release, not his throwing release, but his release from the Washington football team after 607 days with the club. We're going to talk a little bit about coaches who fix their side of the ball, Pete Carroll, and maybe or maybe not Mike Zimmer. We got our Week 17 picks. A good Ask the GM that will follow up on a hot topic this week with Urban Meyer maybe dipping his toes in the NFL water. Randy will have some great insights there. I wrote a column on Monday on the topic, so we have a lot we can go with there. Let's start off, Randy, kind of with the Monday night game, just a routine Buffalo Bills 38-9 victory to complete the sweep of the New England Patriots. Loved what Sean McDermott said afterwards, by the way. Did you see that?
Just being a pro, right?
He said, you know, you can play that underdog card thing, but there's a certain point when if you are good, you just have to act like you're good. And I thought they acted like they were good last night. Let's get into this because it's more than just about the score, but I mean, just where these teams are and the coaching element of it, and Bill Belichick just looking not like Bill Belichick.
Right. It was definitely a role reversal from what we've seen the last 20 years. That's for sure. I think most would not argue that the torch has been passed. That's for sure. I don't think there's any doubt who the better team was. I thought it showed from start to finish. The poise by which Sean McDermott has those guys playing, confidence, all the things that we used to throw on Bill Belichick and the Patriots, now we, can kind of address the Bills in the same way. To me, it was just a sharp contrast because the best player on the field was the quarterback, only it was on the other team. In fact, you could probably go as far as to say the best four or five players on the field were all on the Bills team. When you talk about Diggs, when you talk about Edmonds on defense and White on defense and all the guys that they can throw at you. I mean, the Bills have not only pulled even with the Pats, they've went by them in all of the areas that the Patriots exceeded or lapped the rest of the league for the last 20 years. It was just a monumental game for that reason. Forget the score.
Yeah, and I think we could see. I mean, heck, I think I picked Buffalo to win the division this year with Brady being gone and the opt-outs for the Patriots. It wasn't a big stretch to say that the Patriots weren't going to be as good. But I thought there was a couple sequences in the game that were telling to me. And one of them was that on that fake punt, you saw sort of the Patriots showed a 10-man sort of rush, like they're going to overpower you. And boom, McDermott, right. those guys had the answer. They do a fake. They kind of embarrass them, you know, to complete right. the pass out there from the up back. And then they even, you know, Josh Allen is not Aaron Rodgers out there yet as far as, you know, getting people off sides and running tempo. But they had, within a couple of plays of that, they went quickly, got New England off sides, sprung Josh Allen for a big run. It was like they were playing all the advantages, you know, playing right. all the margins and coming out ahead. Then, like we talked about throwing the phone. Belichick, I assume that phone goes to Ernie Adams. Remember, we used to hear a lot about Ernie Adams and how they were this team that was actually doing what we now call analytics, right?
Right. Yeah, they've been smarter than everybody, that's for sure, the last yeah. 20 years. Yeah,
yeah, but Belichick makes a challenge that, like, you couldn't figure out why he was challenging it. There was, right. I guess he didn't get to see it or something, but he was right. so ticked off. It was embarrassing to miss on the challenge like that. They don't do that, I don't think, that often. He right. throws the phone. I mean...
Hey, the line of communication has been an issue with the Pats all year long, whether it's setting the edge our defense or playing certain coverages and communicating in the back end or the quarterback not knowing, you know, coverages and how to sort that out for the most part. But to see the head coach have a lack of communication with somebody upstairs is fitting, right? I mean, that's really the 2020 Patriots. It's been a struggle for them. I think some of us that have been around a while kind of grin a little bit because that's the way the rest of us have lived on most Sundays. You know, we had some hardship, but, you know, I guess the biggest thing is they no longer have the greatest player in the game to sort everything out for them and make it all good. You know, he was a license to for mistakes to be covered for a long, long time. They don't have that now. So it's hey, welcome to the real NFL, Bill, and the whole crew for that matter.
During the game, I did check the weather in Tampa. Supposed to be 76 and sunny today. It's yeah. it's pretty nice down there. I'm sure Brady's feeling pretty good.
Probably got in 18, you know. Yeah.
Feeling pretty good, and they'll be going to the playoffs. I think he's got the franchise record for touchdown passes down there, and we'll see what they can pull out of it. But, man, that was ugly. That was weird. That was just sort of a confirmation of what we'd seen this season of New England and Buffalo.
I think even to the next degree, Mike, because it was more of a referendum for me on where the Patriots are. Well, it was obviously a referendum on where the Bills are, but with regard to the Patriots, there were markers on in every way that tell me that they're fixing to go through a total rebuild. I really think it's a total rebuild for the Patriots going forward. And they have not had a great history of drafting, of signing players, and yeah, their cap has some space for them to maneuver this next season, but they're also going to be evaluating quarterbacks. I don't think it's any secret. Cam Newton did not turn out to be the answer going forward. I don't think Stidham is. I think that was determined fairly early as well. And so they've got a total rebuild on their hands. And is this one that Bill Belichick even wants to take on? How old is Bill? He's getting up there, right?
So there he is, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe it's a passing of the torch at some point there. Not saying he's not going to coach because he's given us every indication he has. Yeah. But, you know, they've got Josh McDaniels sitting there, the coach in waiting, you know, might get interviewed elsewhere. Although the way that offense operated this year, I don't think that's going to look good on the resume. So I just see a total rebuild. Yeah. And
They'll get some guys back because of the opt-outs.
I think we should start any discussion with these guys with the opt-outs because that – eight guys, somewhat, you know, leaders on both sides of the ball. They didn't have those guys. So they'll definitely get better when those guys come back.
Yeah, I think so too. I like to go to tankathon.com/NFL. You can see the draft order. So there, it's a good
Tankathon. Good are you serious?
Yeah, tankathon.com. Yeah, they have the NFL draft order always updated. So you know, right now, New England will be 14th in the draft order. So it's not exactly top five, but you're at least somewhere in the mix.
Hey, they've made a mastery of maneuvering in the draft and making the business decisions that have always allowed them to do more with less money. But I don't know that that's, you know, they still haven't picked the right players, especially in the draft. They've had multiple picks in multiple rounds in multiple years, and I just don't see a lot to show for it. So they've got some changing of their own processing to do as well.
Absolutely. And so they have to find their quarterback. They're maybe not next Tom Brady, but they got to find who that is. And that's
for the first time in 20 years. Yeah.
First time in 20 years. And I want to talk also today about two other teams that actually are in the playoff mix and might be trying to find their quarterbacks too. Even though they have their quarterbacks, they may not have them for week 17.
Right.
This is pretty amazing. Rams and Cardinals, just to set it up, are playing in week 17, and there's major playoff implications. The outcome of that game could help determine whether Chicago makes it to the postseason, certainly whether Arizona makes it to the postseason. The Rams also have a lot on the line, and yet the Rams, Jared Goff, has thumb surgery. He's out for this game, could return if they make the playoffs and advance. And then Kyler Murray had some sort of a leg injury. At the time, didn't seem serious, but he's in some questions. So Goff is out. Kyler Murray, maybe he plays, maybe not. But to the average fan or even somebody covering the league, you couldn't name all the starting, but all the backup quarterbacks in the league. I mean, it would be hard to go through and name them all. Chris Streveler for Arizona and John Wolford for the Rams. Randy, I know on Wolford, you actually have the file on him in your years of scouting. So you can tell us a little bit about him. Who is he? I mean, let's start with that, with him, just to get people up to speed, because you've scouted him.
Well, John Wolford was a very productive quarterback at Wake Forest. He's just a little undersized. He came to these guys via the AAF in the Arizona Hotshots. So when I spent a little time in the AAF, we played against John, an RPO type guy, a play action guy, a guy that's going to have to do things on the move with half fields and rollouts and a lot, maybe even a poor man's Baker Mayfield, something like that you could expect.
Gotcha.
But you know, again, you're talking about a 5'10 guy who's going to be limited in the pocket as to making all the throws and actually seeing what he's doing back there. So that's a struggle. I found that it's the philosophy some of these teams use on backup quarterbacks is all over the map. I mean, you got guys making minimum salary that, frankly, the Arizona guy who we'll talk about in a minute, I never even heard of his name. I'll be honest with you. And that's my job to know these guys. I've never heard of him. I had to go back and look when I heard this guy might play.
Yeah.
And then you have all the way to the other end of the spectrum, somebody like John Gruden, who paid Marcus Mariota, what, $7, $8, $9 million a year, something like that. So everybody's philosophy is all over the place. Now, it's usually dictated by your cap.
Yep, I mean, Rams were tight.
Yeah, the Rams were tight, and so that's where they're at. I go back to the prime days of the Indianapolis Colts. They were always tight as well, and Peyton Manning always had a minimum salary guy as his backup as well. So different philosophies, you know, different depending on how you set up and how you build your team, but these teams are playing, no doubt, the biggest game of their season, the biggest game, and they've got to find a way to win a game. It'll be interesting to see what these coaches come up with if these backups are on the field.
So Wolford, you know, people have said about the Rams, you know, have really diminished Jared Goff a lot, right? People say about the Rams, hey, it's all Sean McVay. He's whispering in his ears before the 15-second cutoff. He's telling them what the coverage is. Jared Goff is the ultimate system quarterback, and we know better than that because he can make some really good throws. Yeah. I mean, it's not like he's a completely limited passer. But that's the narrative, and I think there's been some truth to that, right? And so is there any way that, you know, the Rams lose some capabilities with a new quarterback in there, but can Sean McVay, if that's true, shouldn't Sean McVay be able to get more out of Wolford, plug him into the system, and maybe not be great because they haven't been great offensively anyway lately, but function, run their offense, or is that too much to ask?
I think he has to change the system, Mike, to be honest with you. He's got to change it to fit what this kid can do a little bit. He's not going to be able to throw the ball downfield quite as much as Goff did, but I also think it's going to be fun to watch. He's going to expand the RPOs. He'll expand a little bit of the option plays with a quarterback keeping the ball. He's a very good ball handler. John Wolford is capable. He's just going to run into some physically challenging things because everybody else is big and strong and faster. So can he put together a game plan to win one game? Yes, probably can. I think it's a lesser version of Taysom Hill. You know, you're going to have to change what you do. And I think, you know, obviously Sean McVay is a guy that you would pick to do this because he's proved this year, for the most part, that he can come up with a game plan no matter what it takes to win a particular game. He's going to be taxed this week.
I wonder if McVay is sitting there. I mean, he'd rather have his starting quarterback, but I mean,
right?
He's been critical of Goff this year. I mean, I've just gotten the vibe watching them that, you know, all things equal, he maybe wouldn't mind trying someone else, not John Wolford necessarily, but you know what I mean? It's just been a little bit of a weird
season. I think
season.
In a normal game, yes. I don't know about week 17, and this determines our fate.
Careful
I think
what that's you wish
little,
for.
That might be a little egotistical to say, this is my chance. We got it all figured out. You know, the mad scientist at work. I don't know. That's going to be the brights will be bright, and it'll be the brightest John Wolford's ever played in front of, that's for sure. Yep. Even though there's not a person in the stands.
So Chris Streveler's a great one because there's a picture. He actually won the Grey Cup with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, okay, in the CFL. And so that last night I was researching and I found this great front page of a newspaper up there that showed him, you know, carrying the Grey Cup, I guess. He's wearing a fur coat with no shirt under it. It's like Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? But this guy, he had 8 touchdown passes and 14 interceptions, okay, during the Grey Cup year. He had 12 rushing touchdowns, 700 yards rushing. Tough guy. I mean, he played through the playoffs. He had a broken leg, something called a distal tibia fracture. I think it's right there at where the tibia meets the ankle, and a high ankle sprain, and played. That's tough. I mean, but maybe the downside of that, Randy, is that maybe he's tough like a defensive lineman, but does he play quarterback? What do we got here?
I mean, like I said earlier, I didn't know who this guy was when I heard his name and he was a possibility of play. So I had to reach out to my Winnipeg Blue Bombing contacts, right?
We all have them, right?
Yeah. They had nothing but good things to say about the kid. I'd like to say I saw this guy on tape, but like I say, I would know him if he kicked me in the butt. He is a big, strong, like you said, fullback linebacker looking dude who runs over defensive backs. Who trucks people was the exact word that I got from the Winnipeg guys. You know, limited in the passing game, limited making throws downfield. But they credit him, obviously, like you mentioned, with the Grey Cup win. They said, we wouldn't have won it without this guy, no doubt about it. But just a unique, different type of skill set that you don't see in the NFL especially. So, in this setup with – Cliff Kingsbury's offense, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall when they decided this is a skill set we want as our backup quarterback. That was a little odd.
They've had some bizarre ones there. Remember when Logan Thomas was drafted and he's playing tight end in the league now and was sort of like, okay, what is Arians trying to do? Well, Bruce is gone. Now you have Kingsbury. Steve Keim's been the GM the whole time. I'd love to hear, what's the thought process on this guy? I suppose you could have a very specific game plan in a 1-week basis.
Yes.
No one signed this guy thinking, hey, if we had to go half the year, right? Or if we had to go 10 weeks, we're not going with Chris Streveler. But maybe in a 1-game situation, are you going to?
I don't know. I mean, they paid the guy too. The word was they paid him $100,000. So they identified him and went after him and got him. And so they definitely, we would think, had to have a plan in place, like you said, to put in some kind of a package. Maybe it's just so one-off that, you know, hey, let's throw out Army's offense this series and see what he can do, or Navy or whatever. But that's kind of the skill set. I don't know.
Did Kingsbury ever have anyone like this? I mean,
Well, the best description I was given was Tim Tebow. You know, in obviously he can't throw like Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow won the Heisman Trophy, but the same type of skill set that Tim had, in that probably a better runner, better decision maker, has some dynamic leadership ability. But I've never seen Cliff Kingsbury with a package like this, or even the want to have one. So it's an interesting dynamic for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
We actually could have another backup starting with playoff implications, you know, at stake here for Washington, right?
I mean, yeah. Washington. In their biggest game of the year, too. Yeah.
Their biggest game of the year, certainly hoping that Alex Smith can make it. But I want to get into them a little bit because Dwayne Haskins' release this week was big news. And, you know, when you think about quarterback disappointments, not just for not playing well, but just sort of like the whole thing, right? There's sort of a ethos or an ethic about the position, playing the position, that is about more than – it's about being first at the meetings, right? It's sure. about knowing the offense better than everybody else. It's about knowing where everyone's supposed to be. There's a kind of a global – job description with being a quarterback, right? That's why they make more money. I mean, they're the guys yep. you can count on to do the little things, right?
Right.
So Ryan Leaf made it 1,047 days, okay, with the Chargers before he was let go. Jamarcus Russell, I think, was sort of another one where it just didn't compute. He made it 1,104 days, okay? Yep. Dwayne Haskins, 607 days. I mean, that is...
half as long.
It's a year earlier than you see this happening, right? I mean, sometimes you make a mistake, and maybe that's better than sticking with a bad guy for sticking with a guy for two extra years when he's never going to get there anyway. But this
right.
this was a different situation than almost any I can remember for this quickly.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's definitely different, and some of it is as simple as timing, right? I mean, I'm not saying that what he did doesn't, you know, damage one to play the position that you mentioned with the characteristics we all look for. But here's a new coach that didn't draft him in the middle of a culture change that permeated the whole organization. So it's almost like everybody is on double secret probation to start with, you know.
Yep.
So Ron Rivera, he's going to say, okay, let's give him a little bit of a chance. This is really strike three for him in this short season this year already. We said it last week when we talked about evaluating some of these quarterbacks. Leadership and intangibles matter. When you look at film on Haskins, he can make all the throws. He's a big, strong kid. The ball comes out good. You know, he looks like an NFL quarterback. And he looks like a skill set you'd say, hey, I want this guy. I'm sure Urban Meyer and the Ohio State guys, you know, they all stamp this guy as yep. I'd be interested to hear what they say now. But yeah, the work ethic has reared its head. You know, he just the total immaturity that he showed in his whatever it is you said 600 some days. You know, just keeps coming back. He can't take a step forward because he takes two back. So I feel almost bad for the kid. I do think at some point, and hey, we're all like this. We all mature at a different age, right?
I'm still waiting to mature.
At some point, when he does mature, he might be worth having around. I don't know if it'll be soon enough to take advantage of the skills that he has, but it's an interesting dynamic, and I totally understand what Rivera's doing. In fact, I don't think they had any choice but to release the kid at this point. But when you think about it, they're playing the biggest game of their season, determines if they go to the playoffs or not, and they determined that they did not want this kid around in any shape or form at all. And that's a pretty hard lesson for, one, the coach to draw the conclusion to, and then the player to accept.
Yeah, they know he's not going to be in the future. And look, it's not going to work there. And I think you're right with the culture thing. They just felt like they had to draw a little bit of a line in the sand. And but no one says that Dwayne Haskins is like a bad guy, or, you know, he's not doing things that where he's going to be end up in jail or anything like that, which is so weird about this, because maturity, you would think people could wait for, but it's almost like a immaturity bordering on cluelessness, right? He doesn't even know where
it's
to begin.
He's just so naive, he's immature, and it's a bad combination.
Yeah, but it's just so odd that you couldn't somehow injure reserve, or you know what I mean, or something to where you could retain the rights and get an off season where you can actually be together, right? I mean, an offseason where we can be face-to-face, hopefully that's coming in the next 5 or 6 years, right, Randy? I mean, I'm kidding, but hopefully this year. Yeah, but you would think if you could get somebody of high character like Ron Rivera with somebody like Dwayne Haskins, who, like we said, he's not robbing banks. He's not, you know what I mean? There's not like some imminent risk. He's doing immature stuff, which a million people his age do and older.
Right. I would only say this, and these are the things we know about.
Yeah.
The things that have been public are obviously what we know about. My guess is there's even way more to it that we don't know about. The little things that happen around the building and have since Ron got there. So there's probably a litany of things that, again, we'll never know about. But that's an assumption on my end. Maybe I shouldn't make that, but I just figured there's
a lot of things. Yeah, but I don't think you're saying that ominously, Randy. You're not saying like he has a double life. We're just saying there's a lot of these things that compound themselves inside the building. And and you get to a point, especially sometimes as an empowered coach, there's no GM there, right? Where you say, all right, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And they may be right on this, because I think it's hard to – if your quarterback prospect is less mature than your fourth wide receiver, that's hard to try to bring along with everybody in the building depending on it, right? Everyone's livelihood depending on this guy. So I get that. I understand that it's probably the right move for Washington, but it is also sort of like what happens when you have a coach who doesn't have someone to go through, really. He just...
That's part of it for sure. I do think you hit it on the head, though. You're talking about a lot of adult men and professionals that probably got together and said, hey, I do not want to hitch my wagon to this.
Right.
I'm not going to put my family at stake. I'm not going to put your family at stake. This is not what's going to lead us off a cliff. And they just said, enough's enough. Yep. We got to move on. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Yep. And then this is over. And like you said, it's almost like you're cutting ties from this past that had to be left behind anyway. Yes. Right? Organizationally. I don't know if getting rid of Dwayne Haskins solves the problems for the Washington football team. Certainly gets one of them off of Ron Rivera's plate as he tries to get this team to the playoffs, and probably has a great chance of doing so with the state of the NFC East. There's a couple other teams I think I want to talk about in terms about, you know, the ability to fix issues during a season. And one of them has been Seattle. I mean, I think, and I've seen this before with Pete Carroll, like even when their offense was broken halfway through a season, by the end of the year, he seems to get whatever the issue is kind of back on track. And sometimes it takes longer than the fans would want, you know, and he doesn't always intervene as early as maybe you would like. But by the end, the Seattle Seahawks are playing decent defense. Their pass rush has been okay. Now they've played some easier teams, but I think that is a good example of a team with a coach who, going into the playoffs, maybe has been able to fix the one thing that was absolutely going to hold him back. And really what got me thinking on this topic, Randy, was watching Minnesota give up 50 points, you know, to New Orleans. Granted, they're playing New Orleans. It wasn't like they were playing the Jets or something, but that was a non-competitive effort by a team led by a defensive-minded coach who made it very clear to everybody he's never had a bad defense. and he's got a really bad defense. So the contrast between those two was kind of interesting for me, and I know you too, going into the playoffs. What do you think is at the heart of this, and what sort of stands out to you?
Well, I think for one thing, I don't think Pete Carroll gets enough credit. I'll be honest with you. And some of it may be his, you know, just his demeanor and his zippity-doo-dah personality and, you know, all the other things that come with it, the cheering on the sidelines and just the way he is. I don't think he gets enough credit for being a really good coach. And we know when you're a head coach in this league, you've got to become the fixer, right? You got to fix things. And when the issues lie on the side of the ball, which happens to be your expertise, that really puts pressure on the coach to fix. And I think he's done that really year in and year out with whatever issues that have come up in Seattle. He has found a way to fix things, whether it's, you know, who knows how he's done it. But I think we just got to stop and give him credit. The guy's a great coach, probably going to the Hall of Fame someday. And people are just going to have to accept that. And I think this was another example of that. This defense was shambles early on. We even talked about on the podcast, there's no way this team can go on and make a Super Bowl run with playing like they are. Now, I'm not giving him all the credit because I'm sure Ken Norton Jr. had something to do with it. But this is Pete Carroll's team and it's his defense. And nothing's going to happen out there that doesn't really represent his likeness. So I think we got to give him credit. And again, another example of just coaches making adjustments in the second half of the season and earning their keep. I think he's done that. With regard to Mike Zimmer, I felt like his comments after the game, and like you said, they gave up 50, and it's hard to give up 50 points in the NFL. It's hard to score 50 points. I don't care if you're playing the Saints or the Jaguars. The other teams are good. And so I felt like his answers to this, like you said, were a little bit of a cop out. You know, I've never had a defense this bad and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, they're missing a couple guys. Hunter, their pass rusher, hasn't played all year. And Robert Barr, I think is his name, the UCLA rusher, the outside linebacker. He hasn't played all this year. So they're missing some things, but you'd expect a better effort from this team, especially right now. That looked like a team that had cashed it in. And I thought his comments, and again, I like Mike Zimmer. I think he's a good coach. But his comments felt to me like they came from a guy who just signed a long-term extension and it really didn't matter to him that much either. You know, he didn't have any real reasons for it other than just to say, this is not me. It's not my defense, you know?
Yeah, right. And we'll give him that. Anthony Barr's out. I mean, Hunter, their pass rusher's out. Some of those things are issues for them, but everybody's got that type of stuff going on. And what I didn't like was the I nature of it, my defense, I haven't had. Just to me, that sets a tone. I mean, you know what I mean? This is such a wee game. And I think starts at the top, right? I mean, what great coaches are always talking about I, and he said that repeatedly. I have never had a bad defense. It's a little thing, but it just makes me a little less forgiving in the analysis, I think. Okay, you want to say I and it's on you, and it's your defense, and it reflects you? Okay, well, you just gave up 50 points.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and that was not competitive. And I was kind of thinking, what that made me think of, because we saw Detroit like that too. Now, Detroit is a different situation because they didn't have their coaching staff at the last minute, and even Matt Stafford left the game. But I think that this COVID season is more of a grind than is even known or discussed. The daily testing. I've talked to people that aren't even players on teams who are like, hey, unless we're really in it, and you know, I'm looking forward to the end of the season because you can't even take a weekend to go away on your bye week because you got to go in and get tested every single day. And I think everyone is already dealing with this pandemic, and there's a stress felt element to that, right? With it, you don't have the interactions you normally have socially, all these things that affect your quality of life. And I think there's a bunch of teams that when the season's over are going to take a huge sigh of relief and be glad there's not a game next week. And for some of these teams, whether it was Minnesota or Detroit, you know, maybe we started to see that. On the whole, though, I must say I've been impressed. Jets have kept swinging and playing hard. Some of these teams that are out of it have actually been representative. And I think in this year, you give them a little bit of credit for that.
Well, these seasons are long under normal circumstances. 17 weeks is a long time. But with the COVID fatigue, like you mentioned, I mean, I can only imagine how the burden has increased every week. And I'll say this, in week 17, I would not want to be a bettor. I wouldn't want to bet on games in week 17 because I'm not sure what you'll get. I think sometimes there's players that have their car packed before the weekend.
My guess is
there's a lot of those this week that have their cars packed, and it's not to really challenge the integrity of the game, but it's kind of easier to see why they're doing what they are doing and maybe how the efforts do dwindle. But then you have a guy like J.J. Watt come out and give a speech like he did, then it makes you say, hey, we got four or five more games. Let's go. You know, he had me fired up ready to go.
Oh, I was just thinking of him. I'm glad you said that because I'm thinking, you know, those cars were idling in the parking lot and he went out there and took out the keys.
Yeah, he stole the keys. You're right. From a bunch of places. In fact, he might not have had to. He said it with such passion that those players that had a pack might have went and did it themselves. You know, just said, I'm going to have about face. I got to punch the clock here for another 7 days. I thought that speech was awesome.
It really was, you know, and we're going to get to our pick segment next. And I actually do have Houston and Tennessee on there for this week. I was kind of trying to look at these games and be like, which ones do you want to pick? You know, because it's hard to know how some of these teams are going to do. And Randy, I feel this year as we do transition into our picks, you know, this year I have felt like, especially for a long time, I felt like we've done great on these picks. Like, I don't know if Vegas has been a little off or something. Certainly early on, I think they underestimated the fact that the crowd noise would be gone and the road teams would do better. So for a while there, it was just easy to, you know, take the over because the offense is going to be better on the road or whatever. Last week we got freaking slaughtered. I mean, we were looking good. I think we both took Indy against Pittsburgh and we got 2.5 points and it was looking good the whole game, you know, and then it didn't look good. That's gambling, right? You gamble long enough, not that we were gambling, but you try to pick against the spread long enough, it catches up to you. You're not going to. That's why on late night TV, there used to be guys selling their gambling plans because if they could actually do it and beat the system, they would be doing it themselves, right? So then we both took the Rams and we took the 2 points against Seattle. And for a long time, it looked like, you know, it was a toss up. I think I thought the Seahawks would win, but I would rather have the points. And then what did we do on Tennessee at Green Bay? In my notes, I can't remember if I.
I thought we had Green Bay. At least I would like to think we did.
But, well, nobody go back and listen. So that was it was a tough week either way last week. Yes. This week, I got a couple games down that are of interest. Green Bay at Chicago, Packers by 5.5, and Chicago's been playing better offensively, but I think I have to roll with Green Bay. I think Aaron Rodgers, MVP, I think he's got the passer rating calculator in his head. It updates during the game, and he knows exactly where he's at.
Yep.
You with me?
Yeah, I am. Nobody's playing better. I think you're right. He's locked up the MVP race, in my opinion. And their defense, I don't think, gets enough credit. Their defense has played good. I guess the only question is, what type of effort level are you going to get, and how important is the game for Green Bay? Obviously, Chicago has to win to get in. So that's, you know, you're not going to.
Well, number one seed. I mean, does the number one seed enough of a carrot or not really? You're kind of shrugging. I can see a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I guess it would be if I was in Lambeau Field. You saw the other night what the number one seed could do to the opposition. So, you know, if that's the case, and we have no way of knowing, but I'm with you. I'd give the points. I would pick Green Bay. I just think they have so many things going, and they are the better team for sure.
It was funny yesterday. I was watching Trubisky video with a coach on a Zoom type of a thing, and we were trying to say, hey, is Trubisky playing better, this and that. We just watched a bunch of third downs, and it was clear early. It wasn't very impressive what they're doing. I mean, they've gotten a running game going. They've actually, Matt Nagy has done some fixing probably that we didn't think he could do. So they've done a better job, but I know you haven't changed your opinion on Trubisky and what they should do, correct? Let's just get that on the record going into Week 17.
Well, I have more faith in Trubisky than I did with the coaches and the plan they were rolling out there and the evaluations that the front office did to build the team. So you can say what you want. I don't love the Bears in any way or fashion, but I think Trubisky might you know, be the lesser of those three problems at this point.
Interesting. Okay. So would you consider in any way him being part of the plan in Chicago next year?
I guess it depends on the number.
Yeah,
you obviously have to have options. I don't think they have any other options. And I guess it depends on, can you tell me who the coach is going to be?
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's still some things that have to be decided. If they lose this game and don't make the playoffs, I still think Chicago, you know, may get out the brooms and figure out a way to change course. I don't know that.
If you're a Bears fan, are you wearing a Packer jersey this weekend for that reason?
Yeah, it's a good news, bad news day for you. That's for sure. You're in the playoffs, but you may sign up for a couple more years of Mitch Trubisky and Nagy. So I don't know.
Yep. Okay, our last one here. Tennessee's a 7.5-point favorite at Houston. They played a whale of a game earlier in the year. Remember, I don't know if it was 32-29 or some type of game like that with controversial coaching decisions going for two. It was wild. And it feels like, obviously, Tennessee has, more going here and more reason to play well. J.J. Watt calls out Houston. You willing to ride with Titans and take 7.5?
Yep, I've got to. I'm taking Tennessee for sure. I love what JJ's done, but I think that.
Oh, you'll give the 7.5.
Yeah, I'm giving the points. I just think Tennessee, again, has more on the line, more reasons to play. I guess the scary part about Houston is sometimes when you're out of it, you play like you're out of it, and you can throw caution to the wind. But I think in this case, Tennessee comes out and establishes that running game. And I've said for the last few weeks, playing defense is hard coming down the stretch. It's really hard for teams that are out of it. So I think Tennessee will find a way to run the ball and probably run it down Houston's throat and control the clock. And I don't even know if Deshaun Watson's going to play. So I don't have any problem giving the points. I'm with Tennessee.
Absolutely. I'm with you there, too. And just stacking it right here, the Texans have covered 33% of the time this year. That is tied with the Eagles and Cowboys for the lowest in the league, which means that, that just means Vegas or the public had higher expectations for met for them.
Yep.
It's time for Ask the GM.
Last segment here, Randy, Ask the GM. Good one here. Urban Meyer's name has come up as an NFL head coaching candidate. What's your take on Urban Meyer? Would love to hear this, Randy, with your years of experience and your experience in hiring, your experience at the college ranks. You've been around college coaches that were great in the NFL. You know about Urban Meyer. What do you got?
Well, I think specifically talking about Urban Meyer, obviously he is a gritty, gritty, accomplished coach at the collegiate level. I think it is about fit, and there might be a certain franchise or two that fit him better than most. But having said that, his candidacy at the NFL level, I think, would be championed by ownership. I don't think it would be championed by scouts or personnel people, just based on how they've been treated over the years when you go into Ohio State. It's a struggle. It's a hard visit for NFL people to go into. You're really always not comfortable around the program, the building. So I don't see general managers or personnel people lining up for more of that. So I do think ownership sees the bells and whistles, sees the productivity, and you can't really discount it. I mean, he's done what he's done, but he's also done it with better players than everybody he plays. So much of college coaching, and we've talked about it, is about recruiting. Recruiting has nothing to do with the NFL. You don't recruit players. We don't get to go, recruit 5 or 6 first-round picks every year. Nick Saban and I used to always discuss this, and we'd say it tongue-in-cheek. We only get one first-round pick, and so, when he goes to Alabama, he can recruit 5 or 6 every year. Therefore, your margin for error goes up. You don't have any margin for error in the pros. So there is some disconnects with regard to just Urban's personality. Would he get along? There's so many things that have to happen in the NFL decision-making-wise. Sometimes people are wired to have to make every decision themselves. And I'll be honest with you, it's impossible to do at the NFL level. You cannot see every player. You can't be involved in every contract negotiation. You can't be involved in all these intricate details enough to where you're knowledgeable enough, especially when you've never been in the NFL for a day. It's just hard to catch up. So therefore, you have to trust others to do their job. And it's a struggle sometimes for these college coaches. And in this case, Urban, I think it's going to be a struggle for him to trust others. That just doesn't seem like it comes with hiring Urban Meyer.
Absolutely. That's great. You mentioned the ownership thing. And I have kind of heard through the, grapevine a little bit that maybe he does have kind of relationship with Shad Khan there.
Doesn't surprise me.
In Jacksonville, which is only, an hour's drive or so from Gainesville, where he had a nice run. And that would be the type of, that would be the exact impetus for hiring someone like Urban Meyer, an owner.
An owner of a team, and
from Urban's perspective, Trevor Lawrence is coming out. I mean,
no doubt.
I'm sure Urban Meyer has a pretty good eye for talent, right? Because he's been recruiting, and a good eye for quarterbacks. Or you don't think so?
We'll see. Yeah.
Well, maybe anybody can look at Trevor Lawrence and say, I want that.
Well, I think you probably can. But anyway, it's a good place to start. I mean, you're talking about no boss other than the owner. I'm sure that's a prerequisite. I don't think Urban Meyer is really going to work for a general manager. That's just not in the cards. So that and the fact that we can start this process with a legitimate franchise quarterback, I mean, that doesn't happen very often.
No, I'm with you on that one. So do you have any sort of a sense of, I mean, he's going to coach again somewhere, right? I mean, is he too young to never coach again? Or do you think is there any way, people were asking me this yesterday, what do you think? You think he's going to do it? And I sort of feel like we don't have enough information to know how serious this is. Is this just some sort of, you like to hear your name out there? Maybe we don't know that, but.
The things that would worry me a little bit about Urban are, you know, he's left a couple jobs and there's always a little bit of a health concern kind of lurking in the background. Remember that happened at Florida, you know? And the other thing is, when the going gets tough or when the media starts to criticize, it seems like he has a little pushback from that as well. A place like Jacksonville, that's a small media market and probably one that he's more used to, like a college media market where the coach can be the star, might be a good fit for him. Just like you said, because of all the reasons, you know, the NFL generally is not a coach's league. Star coaches don't, you know, run the day. It's the players. The players run the day. And sometimes that's a struggle too when college guys come and really the media, the city, they don't necessarily pay to see the coach. They want to see the players. It's a players' league. I just don't know. It's about the right fit if Urban Meyer does decide to venture in.
Think of that place too, where Jalen Ramsey basically said, I'm out. You know, what's Urban Meyer going to do besides get rid of him? You know, that sort of thing. So the ability to work with people, it's not just having power over everybody, right?
No. I mean, you have to work with people, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be a fun one, I think, to monitor, as all these coaching ones are. I'm sure by next week we'll have additional openings in the league to discuss, and we'll do that right here on the Football GM podcast. I want to thank everybody for a great calendar year of doing this. We've been doing it a few months now. I know I've enjoyed it. Mike Sando, senior writer from The Athletic. Randy, you have been wonderful on this through this season, and I know so many fans have enjoyed your insights, and we're going to continue this next week. We'll see what the playoffs bring. Everybody, you can find Randy on Twitter at @RandyMueller_. You can find me there at @SandoNFL. Thank you, and until next time, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.